This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. We speak with cutting-edge experts and wise elders from across the globe on the issues and action our Earth is calling for. Brought to you by the Terra Nova Foundation, driving environmental change through human connection and collective action.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. Today we explore the world of chocolate and value-based food products. What it takes to bring a food product to market that has strong ecological bones and the challenges for small businesses growing their way whilst holding their values. Today's food market is incredibly difficult to navigate if you want to buy food that is genuinely green. The labelling and misleading names of products is often just the start of the problem as a consumer. And who has time to read every word written on the back of a label, especially when it's often in such tiny writing that you need to carry a strong magnifying glass around to read it? Of course, food taken from your backyard is most likely to be the most green, with zero carbon miles, easy to know where it's made, and you get to eat it fresh. It's arguably the best option for making a difference with food. But some foods are not possible to grow in our backyard or in a window pot. Should we just go without? While other foods we just don't want to give up, even when our budget is really tight. But how do we discern whether these foods are good or bad? Extractive, earth-taking with care, or regenerative, earth-giving with nurture? How do we know if the food has exploited people as well as our earth? Does it matter? Food is the most fundamental need for our day-to-day lives. We need it to survive. However, we have gone well past food as survival. A quick review of the large catalogue of food-related media and TV series tells us this. Have we taken it too far? Ought we try and start getting our taste buds back to the basics without all the salty and sugary and chemical additives? Ought we begin to see treats as simply that, only coming out on special occasions? And when it comes to provenance, over the last 10 years, we've seen a focus by some countries to instill this in the mindset on food. But was that just a passing phase? Supermarkets across the world still stock food with little or no provenance, and we see products with all sorts of tricks to avoid making it easy to see where the ingredients are from. Do we need to take more of an effort to know where our food comes from? Do we need to stop buying foods unless we do? Is keeping it local critical? Is that practical for the production of food that we want and need to buy? If Earth could talk, what would she say? What would she recommend we do in terms of food? Now, today we are very fortunate to have a seasoned foodie in the studio, particularly when it comes to chocolate. She is the founder and CEO of Beneteau Natural Foods, a net climate positive, B Corp certified and a living wage accredited employer that makes the most glorious organic fair trade chocolate. Welcome, Lucy Beneteau.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, I hear the fridge is opening already for this one. Chocolate is beloved by many. But before we dive into the production of chocolate, I'm really keen to hear about you and your journey with Beneteau Natural Foods. Could you give a bit of an intro to you and how this wonderful company came about?
Yes, sure. Thank you, Rose. First of all, I've always loved chocolate. I've always had a little bit of a sweet tooth, and having sweet things in my life has been something that I've always had after dinner or, you know, generally in the afternoons. And so one day, about 13 years ago, I got this idea to make my own chocolate, and I decided that I would try and make it with some of the sugars that the sugar alternatives that are out there, such as agave and coconut sugar and some nectars and potentially stevia. And because I discovered that the cocoa itself, and this is sort of knowledge now, but about 13 years ago, it wasn't so well known that the cocoa was such a healthy a healthy food to eat, the cocoa, especially particularly raw, although that's controversial because raw is not really raw anyway. But if we could keep it raw and bring it into New Zealand, that would be better. But there's all sorts of complications around that. So I thought, well, I'll take some really gorgeous cocoa from some cooperatives that that I've been to, and I'll get the beans and I'll grind them myself and I'll add my own sugar inclusions.
Now, you must, I mean, 13 years ago, it wasn't that common to be talking about agave and...
No. In fact, they came and they've come in and gone out. And then there's also one called Yukon syrup, which I also experimented with.
Right.
And they were just sort of higher lower GI types of sugars, and slightly better for you, though, unrefined sugars, because I knew that it was the sugar and all the other stuff that they put into the chocolate that was making it more like a junk food.
Yeah,
that was making it, sort of bad for us.
Yeah.
So my intention was to set out, make my own chocolate and make it healthy, because the bean itself is a healthy bean.
Yeah, right.
So what we're putting into it is not so healthy.
Yeah.
As I learned and as I experimented, and I actually got a grant to develop my recipes even further, I realised that using, just a good organic sugar, if you're wanting chocolate, you're going to get chocolate by using sugar, because the other sugars will always compromise the texture. They'll also make it very difficult to make. They make it impossible to scale up as well.
Right.
Because of the moisture in a lot of those sugars.
Right.
So it became quite a classic chocolate.
Yeah.
We can fast forward.
Several hours in your test kitchen.
No, years, pretty much years. We'll fast forward to today. And the chocolate that we make is definitely higher in cocoa. It's as high as we can get. We pretty much start with the origin of the cocoa. I choose an origin that I think is a really good origin, and it has to do with the cooperatives that we're dealing with, and, is it organic and fair trade, and then take the flavour of that, and then I'll decide on what inclusion would go well with that origin, because all the origins have different nuances of flavour. And then from there I say, right, now how high can I take it? So those three combinations.
The other thing is cocoa. Like, I don't know an awful lot. I know a little bit, but I don't know an awful lot. So how did you start to find out about cocoa? Like, what was that journey?
Well, at the time I was a teacher. I was a high school English teacher, and I was in the UK, and then I actually went to Dubai and taught over there as well. And fortunately, when you're a teacher, you get lots of nice holidays. So I used my holiday time as, journeying, and I just got really interested in cocoa. I got interested in the plantations. I got interested in the cooperatives. I particularly got interested in the fair trade movement as well.
So were you going and visiting and spending time?
Well, I visited three or four different countries. So I've spent a bit of time in the Dominican Republic and quite a bit of time in Peru. And then hopefully next year I'll get to go to Ecuador as well.
Right.
Yes.
So on the spot learning.
On the spot learning. There's a lot of, obviously, you can find anything you need to know on the internet these days. I learnt about chocolate. I also got some assistance with some grants and things to learn more about chocolate.
Yeah.
And so started pretty much, the whole journey did begin on the kitchen benchtop.
Yeah.
Experimenting. I experimented with many students in the classroom. And
that made English lessons somewhat more interesting.
They loved it. Yeah. And then the journey just kind of kept going and progressed. So kitchen bench top, then I got a little bit bigger. So I decided to get a manufacturer in Christchurch to make chocolate for me. Unfortunately, that didn't work because the equipment needed is it's quite sophisticated equipment, and I was getting a lot of other people's chocolate in my chocolate, because actually wash chocolate machinery really needs to be flushed through.
Yeah, right.
Because chocolate doesn't like moisture.
Yeah, right.
You see, so there's lots of technical challenges there with making chocolate. So I went back to the bean to the bar and made some more at home, and it was just about having that control the whole time over the type of bean I was using
and maintaining that quality. Yeah.
And then that scaled. Then I converted my garage. We sort of maxed out at 100 kilogram batches, which is what you can do bean to bar pretty much in New Zealand, unless you're a large manufacturer.
Yeah.
And there's really only one of those in New Zealand that, that can cope with the scale above 100 kilograms a day.
Yeah.
So,
but producing quite a different chocolate, so it's not like you can just slot onto the end of a
No way. No, definitely not. And their equipment will be used all the time. They probably wouldn't have time to slot in a little Bonetto. So we were sort of in between. So we were sort of, we were getting too big for the 100 kilogram batches, but we're too small for the, you know, the mighty sort of tons and tons per day. So
I'm going to come back to that because I'm really interested in that that growth, you know, from the small to medium stage, because it's quite significant with anyone who's goes from a startup, I think.
And I'm getting quite big now, to be honest. We're starting to
get a little bit. The size?
So we've got a good market in New Zealand. We're in not all the new worlds and we're in quite a few new worlds. We're in a lot of independents.
Yeah, so new worlds are
supermarkets. Yes, we're in supermarkets in New Zealand, Australia, and we're in supermarkets in Australia.
Yeah,
and we're in a lot of independent grocers in Australia.
Now that's where I first saw you, was an independent retail outlets, which is very interesting too. Is that where you started, and then?
No, we started. Oh, yes, we did. We started in the independent, then grew into the supermarkets in Australia.
Yeah, right.
Now in sort of the majors in Australia and both majors in New Zealand, and just about to branch into the UK. We do a little bit of export into Hong Kong and places like that, Singapore.
So look out for Bonetto chocolate when it comes your way, wonderful Brits and everyone
very
in
shortly.
Hong Kong. but I want to explore a little bit when you're going back to the making of chocolate. Now, your chocolate is organic, and I often have these conversations about whether you go organic or not, and people going, oh, you know, there's, you know, organic isn't good, and, you know, or it's too difficult for the cost, or what's your viewpoint on the organic thing when it comes to food?
With chocolate and coffee, organic is really the best way, and there's a lot of reasons for that.
Mm.
The cocoa bean actually has grown 20 degrees either side of the equator.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originated in an organic environment.
Mm.
And it grows in the shade, and it actually relies on other trees to they work, is it, symbiotically?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, so
so you need a bit of an ecosystem
for it to be. You definitely need an ecosystem to grow good cocoa and coffee, because once you start taking out and you're sort of doing things, you're clearing land, you have to start spraying for different pesticides. You have to start treating the land differently. You've got to start putting things into the soil.
Yeah, right.
So
it's all artificial.
It's just like
replacement.
It's like an artificial sort of cycle of doom almost. There's nothing good about growing cocoa non-organically. It's not good for the nutrients.
Yeah.
And I am talking cocoa here, so I'm not disrespecting any other food. I'm purely just talking about cocoa, and I can safely say coffee is very similar because of the nature of where they're grown, and they thrive. They thrive in those organic conditions.
Yeah.
And that's
so was it
why
a no-brainer?
A good thing, yeah,
for
exactly.
You.
Well, it was a no-brainer because also it enhanced, the nutrients are better.
Yeah.
It should be grown organically.
Yeah.
And there's just absolutely no reason to put chemicals when you're growing cocoa, and there's no reason to add anything else.
Yeah.
If you've got a good quality cocoa, which you're going to get when it's grown organically and fair trade as well, and we can come to that, there's no reason to add anything because you're getting a good flavour. It's grown well.
Yeah.
And even milk can disguise bitterness.
Yeah.
But we aim not to use cocoa that has that bitterness. We aim to grow to use cocoa that has a lovely acidity to it, but it's not an off note.
Ah, that's interesting.
So that's why we don't use milk.
It's, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why we don't use milk. It's just not needed. Yeah. We just find that it's not, unless we do just a plain milk chocolate, but we're just specialising in the dark and using the flavour of the cocoa and the origin and letting that shine through.
Yeah.
Mm, because once we start adding the milk, it's sort of disguising it a little bit.
Yeah.
It can, you know, milk can also, you can produce a nice milk chocolate from it, but it's not really our thing. We focus on the actual chocolate. Yeah. Yes.
Ah, that's really interesting.
And keeping it less is sort of a better approach.
Mm.
So we always say, do we actually need that? Do we need to add that? Do we need to add more? Well, actually, yes, we do, or no, we don't. And we think things through.
So that is that constant refinement. Is your kind of default to say, if we won't add anything unless we have to, because we want the main components to shine.
We do, exactly that. Complete, yeah. So we want things to be as good as they can, but without adding anything. A lot of the additives in chocolate are actually used to make the processing a lot easier.
Right.
They're not actually used, they can be used obviously to make the flavour better, but when you sort of develop a bit of a palate, you can sort of taste things that are a little bit artificial and things that are not. So we do keep things as natural as possible.
Yeah.
And just use a natural.
And then you've got all the
flavour and things.
What I love about banana chocolate, and I have to say I am a bit of a fan, a full disclosure here, but there's all different types of flavours. So see, you're talking at the minute like it's just chocolate, you know, but you've managed to get an incredible range of flavours with different
ingredients. We have, and I hope, well, the idea is always to match the cocoa with the flavour that we're using, so we don't always use the same origin.
Yeah.
The raspberry one is a particular favourite amongst most people, and I know that works really well because we use an Ecuadorian cocoa, which is quite sort of chocolatey and malty. It's got quite a deep chocolatey taste to it, and then it's offset with quite a sour raspberry.
Yeah.
And then the cocoa is not too high either, so the cocoa's not overbearing it. It's at like a 60, but it's just really well balanced, and you still get that sharpness of the raspberry, and you also get that sort of chocolatiness of the chocolate.
So where do you get your raspberries from? Like,
well, so the raspberries are actually, we manufacture overseas because of the scale that we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, right.
And so it is all procured.
Yeah.
It is procured in, raspberries actually come from Turkey.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, but you're still looking for the source. It's not. You're still looking for good source because otherwise it's going to compromise again.
Exactly, right? So we always use organic and fair trade if it's a fair trade commodity.
Yeah.
Raspberries are not a fair trade commodity anyway, but we do use organic. It's always organic, yeah.
So let's talk fair trade now.
Yes.
You know, when I was younger, fair trade was quite a movement.
Right.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
I'm showing my age. But it was quite a big thing. Then it kind of seemed to die down a little bit. People weren't so, I don't know what happened really. This is just my personal experience. But it's now coming back into play again.
Yeah.
Quite strongly. As people start to become more aware. I think that linked to the provenance bit, right? So if you want to know where it's from, then you want to know who are the people there.
Exactly.
As well as whether the environment's exploited or not. So for you, what was your sort of trigger into fair trade?
Firstly, I think the word fair trade is confusing to consumers. I hear them because you can have it written several different ways.
Right.
And the way that it's actually written will depend on the organisation that it comes from. So fair trade is a movement in itself, or fair trade, or the fair trade movement.
Yeah.
We use a particular organisation called the Fair Trade International.
Mm-hmm.
So that's spelt capital F-A-I-R-T-R-A-D-E.
Yeah.
And that's recognised by the the blue and black logo with the little
right.
person.
Yeah.
And that's the most commonly recognized logo.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be that organization to be fair trade.
Right.
That is, I think, the one that, well, that's the one that we use, and it's very recognized. And then each, so an organization is an accredited body, and they have somebody that needs to audit them.
Yeah.
So the word can also loosely be thrown around saying fair trade, you know, we're fair trade. But you sort of need to be a little bit careful. You've got to make sure, you've got to see, is it an official logo or is it just a term that people say?
And this happens right across food, right, with the word organic.
Yes, organic
thing,
as well, yes.
Natural or,
yes.
Yeah, fair trade kind of fits into that group. People
can
use a small capital, not a capital, and just use the small letter as if, they're doing something really great, but actually,
and anybody can actually do that.
Yeah,
anybody can use those terms. Anybody can also use the terms direct trade.
Yeah,
but that's not. There's no traceability on that. I mean, absolutely anybody can say that.
So that's something for, I guess, as a consumer, I need to be a bit sort of mindful of that. If I'm looking at something, I've got to look for the accreditation. That's the important bit of
that.
Yeah, look
for the recognised logo.
Yeah.
And then if you want to do your research, you know, see who, what are the principles behind that logo?
Mm-hmm.
And is it traceable? And also, what are the principles? Are they looking after the workers? Are they empowering the workers?
Mm.
Who owns the organisation?
Yeah, right.
A lot of these organisations are owned 50-50 by the producers, which is great.
Yeah, right.
And the organisation on itself is owned by the rest of it. But it means that the producers have a 50-50 say.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll include the links to Fair Trade on our site for this podcast so people can check out your particular one. But that was important to you, I'm guessing, on this journey through.
Yes.
Because now you're not just environmental, you're also focusing on people living in those environments.
Exactly. And Fair Trade and organic often go together as well because the cooperatives they do receive loads of technical support.
I guess it's a culture of nurturing.
Exactly.
If you're nurturing the land, why would
it's
feel
it's
odd
a complete culture of nurturing, which is what, you know, what we're about as well. And so that's the fair trade, and we support them through additional premiums, of which is money that's entirely for the cooperatives to spend on their own needs. And
can you give us a little insight into one of your cooperatives so we can kind of almost paint the picture?
So we have been working with a cooperative in Peru called the Acapagua Cooperative, and we've also been working with a collection of cooperatives in Ecuador. The ones that I have been visiting are the Acapagua cooperatives in Peru. Of course, there's a lot of these farmer groups, and they are all small-scale farmer groups, so it's impossible to visit them all.
Yeah.
But how the cooperatives work is that they collectively work together, so they're collectively owning their fermentation equipment and their tools and their bins, and they collectively are working with fair trade. So that's the whole point of how it works so well is that they're working as a very strong community. And that's the best way to work with cocoa, because so many of the processes involved, such as the fermentation and the harvesting, does require groups of people.
Especially if you're getting economies of scale, I'm guessing.
Yes, economies of scale and its efficiency.
Yeah,
and it just makes good common sense. I mean, a cocoa farmer working on his own absolutely makes no sense at all, because he'd never really be able to collect enough cocoa to be any good.
Yeah.
And also, it also works when you're fermenting cocoa. It works on the critical mass. You actually need a lot of cocoa to build up. In most cases, to build up that heat that is needed to generate and to kickstart the fermentation process. You know, there are other ways around it, of course, but that's the most efficient way, is to pool resources, work collectively, work with each other, and then they make decisions as collectively as a group. which is the strength, I believe, of the fair trade organization, Fair Trade International.
So holding the values of the people and nurturing the land, but still getting enough to get a product that can be made by the likes of yourself. So, so for me, I often describe that as a value-based business. So we have lots of different labels. Some businesses have no labels at all, but are very strong value-based. But what you do see is this common thread of they're not negotiable values.
So they, as
they work through their development of product, they shift and adapt to maintain those values. Absolutely.
And it's what I also love about the working with Fair Trade when we visited the cooperatives was you could see, I mean, we were doing our own mini little audits as we were going and speaking to the farmers. You know, we were just pulling them aside and talking to them and saying, you know, how do you feel? You feel that the system works for you, you know, don't off the record, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're very happy. They get so much support and their children are supported as well.
Right.
And, you know, there was one farmer that said, look, all our families are getting eyewear. Yeah. We all get glasses. If our children need glasses, this is supported by the Fair Trade premiums. And that's because that's how we decided to spend our money. That's where we felt that. And some of the cooperatives, you know, want to spend their money in different ways. They would like to support them with scholarships for their children to go to university and things like that.
Sure.
And so,
but there's options there, right?
There's options, and it's not.
And that's sort of like embedding your give back, is it? It's almost akin to philanthropic giving. You're actively ensuring that you're, as part of your product, you're giving back. I mean, it's not philanthropy, don't get me wrong, but it's almost like that. Feel good. I'm happily going to pay for those add-ons.
We just want to make good, sensible choices that work.
Mm.
And it is, I guess it is about, it's about giving back, but also it's about creating systems that just make sense.
Right. Yeah. So you're looking at, you're looking at it as an ecosystem rather. So
yes.
It's not just
big
purely
picture thinking.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to cocoa, it has so many implications to do things the wrong way.
Yeah, right.
And we just feel that when you're doing things the wrong way, it's the wrong way for everybody and everything, and it just can just go wrong.
Bad.
Just
quickly.
Go bad so quickly. And
Yeah, right. So in terms of your growth, do you have a model in mind? Because this is something that's talked about a lot. You know, success is often seen as how big you can get.
Right.
But you're working with cooperatives. As you're painting the picture here, I'm thinking there's lots of limitations, if you like, to just exponential growth. And we have seen that exponential growth generally tends to end up with massive extraction of Earth's resources in order to sustain that, right? So it's not the best model we've worked out, thankfully. But do you have, so as an organisation, I'm curious to know what how you've grown, and do you have like an idea of how big you're going to get, or do you just...
Well, there's a lot of chocolate out there that's not organic. And there's a lot of cocoa so grown in the world that's not organic. So as our impact, we would love just to be part of this picture of creating, you know, creating some system where people can understand that growing and eating organic chocolate is actually good for the world.
Right. Okay.
It is. It actually is good. It's regenerative. And that's what we're trying to do is that impact through you know, regenerative cocoa.
Yeah. And so is that your non-negotiable? So if you grow your business to a point where that's compromised, then that's...
Oh, no, there's no way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's always is the drive is to we'd never compromise. There's no way. If it gets to the point where, well, that's it, we've got no more supply of organic cocoa, well, I'm not sure what we'll do, but that's where we stop. But you know, there is a slight mission there to stop. You know, obviously, slavery and chocolate is something that does happen in the particularly in West Africa.
Yeah,
we don't play in that field so much.
Mm.
We do use some cocoa from Madagascar, which is fair trade organic, which is great. So you know, that is an issue that needs to be stopped, obviously.
Yeah,
and but for us particularly, it's that slavery doesn't exist so much in South America. So that's not a field that we're playing in so much.
Yeah.
We're definitely against it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're encouraging people to think more about that as well.
As a consumer, that's what we need to watch out for.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And just having that traceability. So the Fair Trade Mark does give that traceability.
Yeah.
And
so is it kind of, so when I'm buying chocolate, which I do.
Yes. Yeah.
If there's no information, it's unlikely.
Yes. Well, no information is no information. Yeah.
So as a consumer, would it be most helpful if I've got no information to not buy? Would that be helpful? And choose those where I do know.
If there's no marks on it, recognised marks, then there's no, you know, there's nothing. You can go, I guess, research each company on the internet, and quite often some of these cocoa manufacturers do have their own programs.
Right.
Yeah. How robust those programs are, it's very difficult to know.
Because there's no one independently.
Yes, they need to also be independently audited. And people can say a lot of things too, but I guess it's just looking for, well, where is the third party, assessor?
Because they're the ones able to visit.
And things like that. So,
I don't encourage everybody to start visiting their source of chocolate.
No.
we'll keep our carbon miles down, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't need to go. You don't need to go to every individual plantation and say, where's this cocoa come from? And yeah, that does definitely not work.
Yeah.
And
So food is such a critical part of our daily lives. Mm. And we've talked a lot about chocolate, but I do think there's lots of lessons to be learned. We've been talking chocolate, but it could apply across lots of different foods. How do you think our behaviour needs to shift when it comes to food?
So one thing we're always going to be drawn is the flavour. The flavour has to be good with food, and also price as well. It has to be accessible by price. So changing our behaviour, you know, there's no reason why we can't grow a lot more of the food that we're eating in our little, you know, even if you've got some pots inside or a little veranda or something, you can grow lettuces. You know, I think it has become so easy for us just to pop down to the supermarket every day. I also think we waste a lot of food. There's so much food thrown, and I'm just talking just observation as just a general consumer. I see so much waste in food. Good food being wasted, thrown out.
Do you think we're just taking too much?
I think we're taking food for granted, definitely.
Yeah, right.
And, I'm speaking from personal now, but, you know, just we eat so much as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's becoming so easy, and everything's becoming fast, and everything's becoming quick.
And everyone seems to be getting busier.
And everybody's getting busier, and everybody's just reaching, and yeah.
And more tired, I know, and more everything.
And technology's not helping at all. Yeah. It's speeding everything up. So, you know, in terms of changing our behaviour, I guess just slowing down, I guess, when it comes to food and seeing what's available. You can also do amazing things with technology. So, for example, if I look at my fridge, and this has got nothing to do with chocolate, and I go, okay, I've got a lettuce there, I've got some nice some hazelnuts, I've got this and I've got that. If you can type those into Google and they will bring a recipe up for you on what to do with all those ingredients. You know, you might have some pasta or something. Yeah. So you can use it to your advantage. And I've sort of started doing that a little bit too.
Yeah, it's not like when I grew up, it was, you know, meat and three veg.
Meat and three
veg.
Yeah.
It wasn't much else. No. I can remember actually when Italian food came into New Zealand. God, I'm really showing my age today. But it was like, wow, you know, lasagna.
Yes.
No one could even say the word properly. But we just don't have that experience anymore. We have recipes from around the world that we can access.
We do. And our palates, we're more able to eat a variety of things. So you can pair things together a lot easier. Mm. And so, you know, even just using the food that you have in the pantry instead of thinking, oh, I don't know, I have nothing to eat anymore, and going to the shop and supermarket and buying more food and putting it on top of more food, you know, look at what you have and even just Google it and say, okay, I've got this in my pantry and what can I do with this and this and this?
Yeah.
And it does come up with some pretty good ideas, pretty good recipes. And
I like that. So slow down, be more creative.
And use up the food that we have and see if we can save a bit of money in the process.
Now, I'm going to just tackle something. So thank you for that. I'm going to take that home as well. Look at my fridge differently tonight. But one thing I want to tackle with you is food miles. And so we have got used to, I'm just thinking, my fridge is not too bad because I grow a lot myself. But we have got used to having food from all around the world. And we see it almost as normal, especially in a lot of supermarkets around the world don't even necessarily tell you where the goods have come from. Or so, again, so small that you can't actually see. And so we've got kind of used to just having, you know, pineapples in our, in our cold, you know, neighbourhoods.
In the winter.
And you, I'm conscious, we spoke about a little bit before, but you are getting things from around the world.
Yes.
So tell me about that. How do you, you know, grapple with that?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you grapple with it?
Yes. So chocolate is one of life's small pleasures that most of us can't do without on a weekly basis or a daily basis, some of us. Mm. And so the reality is when we're talking about cocoa, it is grown 20 degrees either side of the equator, so it is never going to be grown in New Zealand.
Mm.
And sugar is probably never going to be grown in New Zealand either.
Mm.
You can grow cocoa and sugar, I think, in the northern part of Australia, a small amount. I don't believe it's organic.
So at the moment you're limited to the tropics.
You're very limited to the tropics, so it's always going to come from a long way. So the option is, okay, let's do without chocolate altogether.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. Or we think, how can we, you know, do this the best way possible? The other thing is manufacturing chocolate. It is not as easy as mixing some cocoa powder in a bowl with some cocoa butter, and that's, you know, it does take quite sophisticated refining equipment to grind the cocoa bean down to a particle size with the sugar, which can sometimes take several days.
Right.
There's no water involved in the process at all. It is a and then there's the tempering of the chocolate as well, which is very complicated because the cocoa butter has like five or six crystals that need different temperatures throughout the process, and it's highly controlled environment. Right.
So this is why you've
yes,
gone.
And so it's not that it's highly processed, as in well, it is highly. It goes through a process. It's not highly refined and extracted and added. And it's that the process to make chocolate is technical in terms of movement and also temperature.
Yeah.
So that's what has to be nurtured throughout. Now that once you're making into a scale that can provide for, you know, more than enough for people to enjoy it on a medium scale, unless it's boutique level, you do actually need quite quite sophisticated equipment.
Yeah.
And so we do use a manufacturer in Switzerland to make for us.
Mm.
And it's all based on efficiencies. So their whole entire equipment is purely organic.
Right.
And as I mentioned before, one of the issues that making here was that constant contamination.
Yeah.
And we weren't getting the flavour of the chocolate. We weren't getting the same chocolate in as what we put it.
So the integrity of the chocolate had to win.
It did.
Yeah.
It absolutely did. And the flavour still had to be there. And we still had to be able to say, you know, we know the origin of this cocoa. We know where it's come from.
Yeah.
And without this mixing and blending of other things. And we also needed to say we have control of the process from the bean to the bar.
Yeah.
We can't do that in New Zealand, unfortunately. Not with the unless I, you know.
It is a small country.
It is a small country, and it's you know, we're not chocolate is complicated to manufacture.
So you got scale. So we have to remember that when the next
we
time
do.
We buy a bar of chocolate, if we really want grey chocolate, it needs to be looked after. And
it does. And we can get great chocolate on a small scale, but not everybody can get that because it's quite boutique. So,
yeah.
And there are some great chocolate makers in New Zealand that make from bean to bar here.
But then it's got to be within local. So, no, great. Thank you for explaining that because, you know, sometimes people jump into the critical point of carbon miles before anything else. But actually, we've got nothing so perfectly black and white.
Never. It's about doing your best, though, and it's about thinking through the process and how can we do this, you know. Yeah.
And transparently,
and being transparent, exactly. Yeah. And we offset 120% of all of our miles,
right?
Through two ways, actually.
Mm.
One is through the cooperatives that we work for.
Yeah.
So we, when we're manufacturing our bars, for every 1,000 bars, we're actually planting a timber tree,
right?
So that provides future income,
right,
for the farmers, and it provides shade for the cocoa, and it provides the right sort of regenerates the soil in the appropriate ways, and it also gives the farmers a choice if they want a medium, a long or a short term income from that tree.
I'm guessing for you to know that they've told you that. It's not you've come in and gone,
you need
a tree.
This is we actually work with a program. It's called the Pure Projet, and we definitely didn't make that one up. it's working
happen.
With systems that already exist, thankfully, and that's an amazing organisation, and I'll put a link to that one as well.
Great.
And then we work with another organisation in New Zealand. It's called ECOS.
Yeah.
And it works locally, so we're actually working within New Zealand and the Pacific of maintaining native forests or tree planting in some areas and offsetting through that.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so that's our business operations.
So you're looking at the home of production and
exactly.
consumer.
Yeah. We work with both. So we have to measure what we're producing, measure our carbon, and then we have to look at ways year upon year of reducing what we're reducing, so measuring, reducing, and then we offset.
Yeah.
And then every year, hopefully, we try and improve, make small steps to each year.
Just do better every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's thank you for sharing that. That's because sometimes people just skip over that bit. But
they do,
It's quite hard work.
It is a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of thought being put into it. And it's not just we would love to make our chocolate here in New Zealand, and we used to, but it's just not realistic, and we wouldn't get that traceability. It wouldn't be organic, unfortunately. And, you know, the equipment is very, very expensive. We're probably talking billions now, not millions anymore. So
So
and the equipment actually comes from the other side of the world anyway.
So these are the things, right, for a business thinking through what product they're going to make, because often people start out and they have the local and everything, and then of course they want to do more.
Yes.
So I'm guessing you got to that point, and that's where the hard decisions really began.
Yes.
Are we going to continue, or are we just going to be more of a hobby?
Exactly. A smaller product without that reach, and we really do want that impact. We know that there's a lot can be done with organic fair trade chocolate in the world, and there will be a lot of supply of that if we can just encourage more people to eat just generally better chocolate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
have
just
less chocolate but better
have
quality.
Less. Exactly. So we're not talking more we're not getting people to consume more. We don't particularly want that. We're just saying just eat better.
Yeah.
Getting more people to eat better. So we're not saying you all need to eat more chocolate. We say moderation is better. But
be discerning.
Discerning, exactly.
Now, on this podcast, we always like to gain insight from our guests on what actions people can take, and from your insight and experiences. And so you don't have to stick to food even for this question if you don't want.
Okay.
but what actions would you consider people could take to help our Earth and therefore us thrive?
To help Earth and for us to thrive, I would say I'm a little bit biased, but if possible, choose organic, and if possible, grow your own.
Right.
Yeah. If possible, make your own as well. And just enjoy food. Less food, but better.
Yeah, and if I pick up what you said earlier, you said slow down.
Slow down.
Slow down to eat even.
Even. I need to take that advice too. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's hard to slow down.
It is.
It's hard to slow down, but I think it's about, you know, equality and with food in particular. I like to just choose good quality, a little less of it, pay a little bit more, but just enjoy it and have something that is, you know, slightly more nutrient dense than something that's just, you know,
just
fueling you. Yeah. Our attitudes have changed a lot. I'm sure a lot of people are on the same wavelength with that now. It's not about fueling your body to get through the day. It's more about kind of nourishing yourself, nourishing your body, and enjoying as well.
And taking that time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I do find some days I used to love getting up and having breakfast and just relaxing and you know, but lately I haven't had many of those breakfasts, but it's really important to because you can't appreciate the food you're eating.
Yeah.
You know, like sometimes I can eat something and I've completely forgotten what I just ate. Like, oh my God, it's gone.
I know. And I'll tell you what I'm trying to do at the moment. I'm trying to bring everything a little bit more forward. So I'm trying to get up a little bit earlier, have a little bit of time to enjoy a bit of breakfast, and then try and have dinner a little bit earlier in the evening, and then try and go to bed a bit earlier too. And then, I don't know, it seems to work. I feel that, if I just start doing things a little bit earlier, it gives me a bit more time and feel like I'm on top of the day before the day starts.
Then, and that way what you eat then becomes a joy, as opposed.
Yeah, hopefully, exactly. Yeah. It's what it's about. Yeah, and that's why we develop the chocolate as well, to have it. It's a joy. It's supposed to be a joy. A little bit. Yeah. Not a lot, just a little bit each day.
A wonderful, joyful experience at the end of the day. That's definitely how I've seen it. I want to thank you so much for coming on
Rose.
Today. If people are trying to find you, we will put the links up on our website. But if you want to share now, what's the website for Bonetto?
So we've got two sites. We've got www.bonetto.co.nz. We've also got Bonetto in Europe, which is www.bonetto.eu.
Wonderful. So we will be sure to share that. And thanks again. It's been wonderful to speak to you and to hear everything about your journey. And we look forward to seeing more Bonetto chocolate and organic and fair trade foods everywhere.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Rose.
That's it for Earth Talks. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Terra Nova Earth Talks. For more information on the content and links from this podcast, go to the Terra Nova website. That's terranova.foundation. To listen to other interviews in this series, go to the Plains FM website. That's plainsfm.org.nz. Search for Terra Nova Earth Talks. Also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Bye for now.